Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome to McGill Care's webcast series supporting family and informal caregivers. I'm Claire Webster, a former caregiver, certified dementia care consultant, and founder of McGill University's Dementia Education Program. I work with a dynamic team of leading healthcare professionals to oversee the program, who include Dr. José Moret from the Division of Geriatric Medicine and Dr. Serge Gauthier, Professor Emeritus, formerly of the McGill University Research Center for Studies in Aging. McGill Cares is supported by the Amelia Saputo Community Outreach for Dementia Care. The McGill Dementia Education Program offers a very comprehensive range of free resources to educate and support persons living with dementia, family and informal care partners, healthcare professionals, medical students, and the public at large. One of our most important resources is the Dementia Companion Guide, which is now available in 11 different languages. It could be downloaded for free, and printed copies are available on Amazon, and all proceeds go to support our program. So I really encourage everyone to go and get a copy of this incredible resource. So to kick off the new year, we will be discussing strategies to improve participation in activities for people living with dementia. And thanks to a very generous donation by Petro-Canada's CareMaker Foundation, today we are very excited to introduce a new free resource, which will encourage people living with dementia, with the assistance of their care partners, to participate in leisure and recreational activities. And I have my colleague, Professor Marie-Ève Bolduc, here with me to explain why it is important and how it came to be. So Marie-Ève Bolduc is assistant professor at the School of Physical and Occupational Therapy at McGill University. Her research interests are directed toward brain-based disabilities, pediatric outcome research, and simulation education. Using her experience as an occupational therapist, curriculum lead, and simulation educator, she's been involved in developing material for the McGill Dementia Education Program since 2019. Professor Bolduc supervised the creation of a dementia activity booklet for caregivers of people living with dementia by four of her students during the pandemic. The booklet has been very popular, and so with her guidance and generous funding from the Petro-Canada CareMakers Foundation, we've brought some of those activities to life in videos, which you will see today. Professor Bolduc will begin by explaining why continuing to participate in leisure activities and activities of daily living is important for people living with dementia. She will share ideas for adapting activities to a person's abilities and show some of the new dementia activity videos, which we are launching today on our website. Welcome to McGill Cares.
Thank you, Claire. I'm happy to be here to present on the strategies to improve participation in activities for people with dementia, as Claire mentioned. So I'll start with a presentation, and then as Claire mentioned, we'll get into some of the videos. So what I want to tell you a little bit about is I want to tell you more about the occupational therapy profession, because often it's not as well known as other healthcare profession. Why participating in activities for people with dementia, but also for their care partners, is so important. Then I'll provide you with some strategies to adapt the activities to the abilities of the people. And we will end by presenting the amazing resources that were developed by our students thanks to the CareMakers Foundation, the Petro-Canada CareMakers Foundation. So what is an occupational therapist? We are healthcare professionals, and we work in very many different settings. So that could be home, could be the community, it could be institutions such as hospitals, it could even be an industry and business where we do a lot of prevention, or even government. We also work with many different populations. So it could be people with difficulties with mental health, could be physical health, could be neurological difficulties or cognitive symptoms. And we use a holistic approach. So it means that we will consider all the different spheres of life. So even for a physical For physical difficulties, we will consider mental health and even spirituality. So what we want to do is to help solve the problems that interfere with their ability to do what people want to do or what they need to do. So it's really all about participation. It's about activities. So how do we do that? It's through analyzing the relationship between the abilities of a person, the activity that they want to perform, and the environment in which that activity is performed. So if we take an example here of a person who would have an injury or a condition that resulted in decreased balance. So that would mean that they're not as steady on their feet. It's a little bit more difficult to move, especially in standing, to walk on uneven surfaces. And this person wants to do their grocery shopping. So that story is very different if the person has access to a car or if they can drive a car versus if they need to walk on an unpaved and uneven road, which in this circumstances, the problems with their balance will interfere with their ability to get to the store. It's also very different if the person typically goes to the store or if they would do their grocery shopping online, which in this case, the difficulties with balance will not interfere with their ability to do the activity. So what we do as OT is, as occupational therapists that we often refer to as OT, is we will look at whether we can change the activity. So is there a way that this person, instead of going to the store, could use the online shopping? Could we act on the environment? So can we give this person access to a car or adapted transport in any other way, somebody who could give them a ride to the store? So that's what we're going to talk about mostly today. How do we adapt activities? How do we adapt the environment? In occupational therapy, we would also work with the person if it's possible to increase, in this case, balance, but we won't talk about this in the talk today. So you may wonder why we put so much emphasis on activity. Why is participating in activities so important? Well, in fact, engaging in activities is an indicator of quality of life, both because it refers to both the physical and the psychological well-being. So maintaining autonomy through participating in activities can help people maintain a sense of personal identity and has a lot of other benefits that I want to go in a lot more detail in the next few slides. So engaging in activities gives value to life because it holds meaning. So it's often associated with the roles that we hold and that are important to us. So for example, could be our role as a mother, as a grandmother, or as a worker. And those meaningful activities that we participate in provide enjoyment and they provide a sense of purpose. So if you remember in the midst of the height of COVID in 2020, 2021, often we couldn't participate in any of the activities that were important to us. So we couldn't work, we couldn't do our leisures, we couldn't meet with the people that are important to us. And that really left a void inside. Well, that's what it feels like when we can't participate in our activities that are important. Participating in activities can also help reduce stress. So we often discuss that in relation with physical activity, but it's also true for activities like doing puzzles or activities that have more of a repetitive motion like knitting that we see in this picture. For people with dementia, it's also been shown that participating in activities can decrease behavioral symptoms such as being argumentative, having delusions, or even with wandering. So activities can provide a stimulation for various abilities, but it depends on the activity and the skills that are involved. So for example, painting that we see in the picture here will stimulate creativity. It involves fine motor skills, by manipulating the brush. And even in this picture, you can see there's a social component to it because it's done in a group. So other activities like crossword puzzles will involve more cognitive demands, while walking, for example, will involve more physical endurance. So each activity will stimulate different skills. And it has been shown that for people who live in long-term care setting, it was actually better cognitive skills for people who participate in more activities. So it really does have quite a bit of benefits in terms of stimulation. Being active throughout the day can also significantly improve the quality of sleep. And finally, engagement in activities that are shared between two people can provide a positive shared moment. So when the relationship with our loved one starts changing because it involves being cared for or caring for someone, our roles that we referred to before as being important can change. And that can be difficult to navigate through those changes. And engaging in activities together can actually help with that transition. And it has actually been found that in the case of a care partner and the person that they care for, participating in activities with the person that they care for gives the care partner a greater sense of satisfaction in their role and helps improve their relationship with the person that they care for. So what type of activities can people participate in? Well, that can be almost anything. I've divided them into four categories, but there are endless possibilities. The first category is what we call in occupational therapy activities of daily living. It involves everything we must do on a daily basis to take care of ourselves. So it includes bathing, dressing, eating, and toileting. The second category is what we do for fun. So this will vary a lot depending on our interests. So it will vary from one person to another, and it can involve arts and crafts. It can doing puzzles, cognitive games such as crossword puzzles, or physical activities such as bowling or taking a walk. Social activities are all about spending time together, and this can take many different forms. So it can be from a movie night in the comfort of your living room, could be even sharing a meal together, or simply going out for coffee, sitting on the park bench together, or listening to music. In our last category, although we often don't think as housework as our favorite activity, home maintenance is something that is often important to us. So think about how a lot of people find it important to have a clean house when we receive guests, or even for some people before going to bed. So helping with laundry or cleaning the refrigerator can be very rewarding. It can also be a safety feature to remove expired items from the cupboards or from the refrigerator, so that because somebody with a neurocognitive disorder or dementia may not think about looking at the expiry date or looking at it to see if the food is good before eating it. Another category that I did not include would be all the things that we do in terms of work or volunteer work, but it will not be the focus of the talk today. So with so many options, how do we select the right activity to do? Well, a big part of that is really interest. So it's difficult to enjoy an activity that we're not interested in. So I put this photo as an example of an activity that I would not personally enjoy. I am really afraid of heights, and I can just see this bridge and it scares me how it would move around with wind. And that was not be an activity that I enjoy. But if you propose to me, you know, that the walk would start on the other side and I would just be in the forest, then that would be an activity that I would be interested in. So that's to be considered for everyone. But that being said, remember that interest can change over time. So people can lose interest in the things that they used to love doing, but we can also discover new interest when we're exposed to new activities. So you can try new things with the person that you care for yourself. You can propose new activities. But when you do that, always pay attention to the nonverbal and the verbal cues that the person would give to indicate whether they appreciate the activity or not. So in occupational therapy, we call the activities that are important to a person, we call them meaningful activities. And these are the activities that will have a positive impact on the person when they're doing them. So just think about how time flies when you do something that you like. You know, the next second, an hour has passed. Or even the feeling of accomplishment when you do something that you needed to do for a long time. So this is important for everyone. At every stage of life, we want to have that feeling of accomplishment. So at this point, I want to give you a few seconds to think about what activities are important to you and for the person that you care for. Okay, so because everyone is different, it's important that we adapt the activity to match the person's ability. So for many activities, you can adjust different components. So the physical aspect, which involves the fine motor skills, like manipulating small objects. It could be gross motor skills, like kicking a ball or walking, or even endurance, task that requires endurance. The cognitive abilities involves understanding the steps or the instructions, planning for things that are coming, measuring, like in cooking, or even remembering. And the social aspects really refers to whom the activity is performed with. So when you think of an activity that you would enjoy, think about what needs to be adapted to fit the abilities. So you may want to adjust one component. So it could be just the physical aspect or the cognitive aspect, or you may want to adjust all of them. It has been shown that for people in late stage dementia, participation is improved by stimulating the senses as well. So it could be something that you can think of in terms of adapting the activity. So what we're looking for when we adapt an activity is that we want it to be stimulating and challenging, but we also want to allow the person to experience success. So we're looking for what we call often the just right challenge. So if you're a care partner, you want to think about what your loved one can participate in and do as much as possible try and only assist when they need it. So you want to promote the person's decision-making and independence and make sure that they do as much as they can by themselves. So when you adapt, if it's too easy, the activity can really become boring and may not provide the stimulation that we're looking for, like I mentioned in the previous slides. So imagine you're used to making a 500-piece puzzle, and we give you a puzzle with 20 or 50 pieces, well, it probably won't be very interesting for you. On the opposite, if we give you a 500-piece puzzle and you haven't assembled any of the pieces after 15 minutes, it might become very frustrating. So in the next part of the talk, what I'll do is to provide examples of how we can adapt specific activities. And you may want to take some of the strategies that we'll propose and use them on other activities that you participate in. You can even use some of the thinking that we'll do in the next few minutes and come up with your own strategies. So in this section, each slide will have the name here of the activity at the top and the skills, whether it is physical or cognitive, that it's being adapted for. So here, eating is essential, but it can become difficult when physical abilities are affected by dementia. But there are a wide range of adapted utensils and dinnerware that can be used during mealtime. So here in this picture, we see a large handle utensil. So that's going to be much easier to grasp for a person who has decreased motor skills. A lot of these adapted plates have also non-skip feet. So that means that as you're scooping the food out, the plate won't be moving around. It doesn't need to be stabilized. That could also be a non-skip mat that you put under the dinnerware so that it doesn't move around. Here we see an example of a two-handled mug. So what it does is that it's using two hands, and that increases the stability of the cup and reduces spill, so it's easier to bring it to the mouth. These adaptive dinnerware, what you can see is they also have sides, like elevated slides here. So in the example here, you can see that it's much easier to scoop on the side of the plate than it would be if the plate would be flat. You can even use finger food if utensils become more difficult. But one thing to consider is that if motor difficulties are present, spills will happen. And now they've come up with fashionable bibs and other tools that can make these moments less upsetting for everyone. As a general rule, cutting the food into small bites can be helpful in terms of the chewing and the manipulation. However, in later stage of dementia, sometimes swallowing can be difficult. And you can notice that somebody would cough or choke on their food more frequently. So if that's the case, then I recommend to consult with a healthcare professional. And sometimes textures can be adapted so that they're easier to swallow. Meal preparation can actually be a nice moment together, but from a cognitive point of view, preparing a full meal can be challenging, but people can be really involved in different steps, as many steps as they can or as few steps as they can. And for people with dementia, different symptoms can affect their ability to participate safely in meal preparation. So for example, because of decreased attention, they may forget the stove on. Abstract thinking may also be affected, and that's going to make it difficult to measure ingredients for a recipe. So what you may want to do is to be the person who provides supervision if you include the stove, or if there's any cooking required, or you may forget the stove altogether and opt for recipes and involve them in making a salad or a sandwich. Here you see an example of mats that have cues. So if the person is involved with setting the table, then this mat will help them know what goes where and provide this helpful guidance. And here is another device that can be helpful in terms of safety. So this one is one that you connect the stove in, and if the smoke detector goes off, then the stove automatically shuts down. So there are different tools. Again, there are different stores online and physical stores that can provide tools that can assist with safety in the home as well. So bathing can be an activity during which we want the person to be as involved as possible. So from a physical point of view, if balance or endurance is limited, a bath bench can be very helpful, so the person can sit while they shower. There are a lot of different models. Some of them go over the bathtub, some are only inside or inside the shower. So again, you may want to consult with an occupational therapist to see which one better suits your needs. For balance or endurance, again, you may want to install grab bars, and that increases safety during bathing, but also transfers when you go in and out of the bathtub or the shower. And there are also some assistive devices such as long handle sponges that can be helpful when some areas are getting harder to reach because of decreased mobility. So, you know, toes, back, so you can reach some of these long handled, use some of these long handled tools. To prevent challenging behaviors during bathing for people with dementia, want to try and maintain the person's routine as much as possible. So think about, when do they typically bathe? Do they normally shower or bathe? So, how is the water typically? You know, do they use like colder water or warmer water? So this is really like, try and maintain what they're used to as much as possible. You can try and create a relaxed atmosphere like we see in the picture below, so not the bright lights and something that's nice and warm in the bathroom. Another thing that's important is to place a towel over the body, because you know it's hard to be exposed when somebody else is in the bathroom with you, so it helps protect their privacy, and really encourage them to do as much as possible. So use cues, use gestures to point as what the tools that they could use or what the next step would be. And if their abilities are really limited, what you can do instead of washing the person yourself is to put your hand on their hand for washing, and that helps provide more privacy for them. Dressing is another area that can be difficult if fine motor skills are affected or if the body cannot be moved in space as much as before. So in this case, you can opt for the looser fitting, which is gonna make it easier to put your limbs in the sleeves or the pants. To try and avoid buttons and zippers, because they require a lot more fine motor dexterity than other closures or other type of clothing. front closure bras would also help and require less movement, and the dexterity is a little bit easier when you can sleep. And now there's a few clothing lines actually that offer adaptive clothing, and the styles have really improved in recent years. So again, you can find them online or in physical stores. And here's an example of a sweater that looks like it has real buttons, but it's actually using magnets. So it's a lot easier to put the magnets together than it would be to put the button through the hole. So there are different different adaptations for different types of clothing that you can look into depending on the abilities of the person that you care for. From a more cognitive point of view for dressing, dressing actually involves a lot of steps and a lot of choice making. So from a cognitive point of view, it's actually very demanding. So to help with the various steps, one thing that the caregiver can do is to put the clothes in the order that they are put on. So on the bed, you could put the underwear first, and then the pants, and then the shirt, and finish with, you know, if there's a second shirt. So in that order, so the person only has to follow the order and can do that more in an independent way. In terms of organization, removing the items that the person no longer wear is really helpful, and removing the out of season clothing or divided in section also facilitate choice making and can also help with being less problematic if the person would, let's say, choose shorts in the winter. Well, by removing the out of season clothing, then that's not going to happen. If the person has difficulty making choices, you can provide two different options that the person can choose from. So say, do you want to wear the red shirt today or the blue shirt? But the person still gets to make that choice. And that's really important from a self-efficacy point of view. And then from a memory point of view, it can be helpful to put labels on drawers, and you can find some printable examples online. So for leisure, I'll just give one example, but adaptations will vary greatly depending on what the activity actually is. From a motor perspective, typically smaller pieces will be harder to manipulate than bigger pieces. So we can think of puzzle, but any other game. So even if you play a board game, if you use bigger pieces, if you can modify the game, that might be easier from a motor perspective, but also speed. So manipulating things at a high speed is more difficult than if the person can take their time. So if we stay with the puzzle example from a cognitive point of view, that we have the number of pieces, obviously. So more pieces, the puzzle will be more complicated, but there are other aspects like the contrast. So here you can imagine that building the sky will be a lot more difficult than this puzzle here that we see at the top, where the birds are very different colors. So those contrasts will help with the cognitive difficulty. And for other types of games, then the complexity of the rules is often what's going to make it more challenging from a cognitive point of view. Social activities, a lot of people will like to be surrounded by a lot of people, but it can also be overstimulating. So we just have to be careful, whatever you prepare, that, you know, if there's a birthday party or any other social events, to again, pay attention to the nonverbal cues or even verbal cues that the person will give, and be ready to switch gear. So if there's 10 people involved and you see that the person is really uncomfortable, then it might be time to do something that's a little bit apart, or bring them back to a more private area. So overall, if we look at communication tips when we do activities with a person with dementia, we want to try as much as possible to face the person when we speak, so they can see our lips, they can see our facial expressions. We want to use simple language as much as possible, so one that's easier to understand, and speaking slower will also make it easier to understand. We want to use intonations that will convey our emotion. So we really want to show how we feel, you know, how happy we are to be doing this activity with them, and show that not just through our words, but through our intonations and our emotions. Because focus is a little bit more difficult, we want to avoid distractions as much as possible, unless it's part of the activity. So having the radio, the TV play in the background, or too many things going around can be distracting. It may make it hard to focus their attention on the task that needs to be done. Even things that are on the table, other things that are on the table can be distracting. We want to use gestures to emphasize the meaning. So we could say, you know, if we want the person to use the soap in the bathtub, then we can point to the soap as we're mentioning it. So we have kind of that double aspects of cues to provide. And we can use even guiding gestures, so we can guide their hands into the direction of what they should be doing to help them with the next steps. So overall, if we want a successful activity, we want to find an activity that matches the person's interest and abilities. So really go with, you know, what they like, propose new activities, but always see if that's something that they're interested in, and what can they do. So focus on their abilities so that we can make sure that it's both stimulating and as a potential for success. We really want to encourage people to do as much as possible before we step in. So we want to promote that self-efficacy, independence as much as possible, because it's important to them. We want to try and maintain routines. So activities that are done within the same routine will also be more easier to introduce. One thing that we have to consider is for energy levels. So sometimes people will get tired, let's say after lunchtime, but that's not the right time to introduce a new activity or even one that requires more energy. So we want to be thinking about that and do the activity at a time that is convenient for them. And the last thing is one that's really important for me and I think to us as occupational therapists, is to really focus on what the person can do. So we call that a strength-based approach. So we don't want to be thinking of what the person could do a year ago or a month ago or even yesterday, because abilities change from one day to another. We want to focus on this moment and say, with the abilities that this person has today, what can we do? And then enjoy that activity based on the strength and the abilities that the person is currently showing. So because participation in activities is so important to us and often overlooked, especially for people with dementia, so as Claire mentioned, four occupational therapy students created in 2020 an activity book for caregivers of people with dementia. And the goal was really to increase participation in activities, break isolation, both at home and in long care settings. So in that booklet, we have proposed more than 40 activities that a person with dementia and their caregivers can engage in and enjoy together. So the activity booklet is divided in six sections. We have a creating and crafting section that has a lot of arts and craft activities, from cooking to origami. We have brain games that include from puzzles to crossword puzzles or to our origami. We have Let's Get Active that features different types of physical activity, stimulate our senses, household activities, and then we finish with social events. So for each activity in the booklet, you can see what the target of the activity is, what the steps are, what the material is needed, what the material is for this activity, and that allows you to gather all the material ahead of time so that you can really focus your time on the activity. And you have some safety tips that you can follow. And really, one great feature of this booklet that really sets it apart from others is that you are presented with options to either adjust the difficulty down or up from both a cognitive and a physical point of view. And with the people who have used this booklet, we've actually found that there was a change in the type of activities that they would do with a person that they care for, but also in the amount of activities. And now, thanks to the Petro-Canada Caremakers Foundation, we are able to bring these activities to life through videos. We now offer 14 videos that are available for free in English and French. And these videos showcase different activities from the booklet. We also show some adaptations that can be made and provide some safety tips. So we really want to thank the Petro-Canada Care Makers Foundation for their generous donation that allowed us to bring the videos to life. And we are happy to now share a trailer of our wonderful videos.
Well, first and foremost, Mariev, thank you so much for such a comprehensive presentation. And I feel like your presentation was the perfect complement to the launch of these amazing activity videos that are going to be available for our viewers and for so many others. And what I loved about your presentation was that how you said, you know, it's important to really learn to like let go of what the person wasn't able to do and to really embrace everything that they still can. And I feel that that is so important. I work, you know, on a regular basis with family members. And the first thing that I hear from family members is everything the person can no longer do. And, you know, your message in terms of adapting and embracing everything that they still can do is so incredibly important. And what I love about these videos is that they're so educational and they will be providing, you know, whether it's family members, professional care partners, you know, healthcare professionals, you know, grandchildren, everyone will be able to learn how to really enjoy and embrace what a person living with dementia can still do.
Yeah. Completely. I think this is bringing a little piece of occupational therapy in everybody's home in terms of adapting and thinking of the person's abilities and what they can do and how we can change the activity and the environment rather than trying to change the person.
So I believe that we're now going to show one of the activities, one of the videos that displays cooking. I have to say that the first time I watched it, I was very moved by it. I'm so excited about showing everyone this video now.
The kitchen is the perfect setting to socialize, stimulate all the senses, and provide the person living with dementia with an achievable and delicious end goal. So, let's get cooking! These are the terms that will be referenced in this video. Please consult the glossary for the full definitions. Throughout the activity, you'll see these icons appear. We'll use them to provide you with quick tips, difficulty indications, and safety guidelines. Pay particular attention to this safety symbol. We've provided lots of useful recommendations to help you minimize risks or accidents when participating in the activity. You can also view all the guidelines in our safety checklist. The safety guidelines and the glossary are available on the McGill Dementia Education Program website, where you can also download a copy of the activity booklet. This slider will appear to demonstrate how to vary the activity. Lighter means easier, darker means harder. While you think about what to make, consider the typical kitchen items you'll need. These will likely include mixing bowls, utensils, a measuring cup, cutting board, and assorted pots and pans, to name but a few. You may even need small appliances like a blender or food processor, depending on the recipe that you choose. Now let's have fun and get started. The first step to cooking any meal or snack, even before gathering the materials, is deciding on a recipe. Depending on the stage of their dementia, you can talk it over first or pick something you already know they will enjoy. This anticipation promotes their enthusiasm for the task at hand and helps increase the appetite for those individuals whose taste and smell have been impaired. Be sure to consult the activity booklet for more ideas and recipes. Pay attention. Many recipe options involve being around a hot stove or oven. This requires extra diligence and should be taken into account when choosing a recipe. Once you know what you're making, place everything you'll need on the counter, including the ingredients and equipment. This is a great way to work efficiently, stay focused, and put all your energy towards the fun part, cooking and being together. Preparing the ingredients is the next step. Wash, measure, roll, peel, and chop away as needed. The person with dementia can be involved in any or all of these steps. Knowing how to pivot to another plan will always be necessary. Easily adjust by handing them ingredients you've prepared or measured and putting them in charge of mixing or stirring. If you like, you can use frozen or pre-cut ingredients. Need more of a challenge? The person you're caring for may prepare a whole meal from scratch. Stay by their side to supervise and act as their assistant. Be encouraging while also vigilant. Spills happen. No need for frustration. Wipe them up immediately to avoid a fall. It's now time to assemble or cook your meal. If the individual is having trouble focusing that day or is in the middle stage of dementia, you can still spend time in the kitchen together. Involve them in the steps they're comfortable doing. Or forget the stove. Pick a recipe that comes together quickly and doesn't require cooking or baking, like assembling cheese and crackers on a plate. A person in the late stages can still enjoy being in the kitchen with you, watching you prepare a meal, taste testing along the way, and enjoying the aromas makes them feel part of the activity. No matter what you prepare, kitchen safety is important for everyone, but especially for a person living with dementia. We're finally at the best part, delicious food and sharing a meal together. That's the real reward. Few activities engage all five senses like cooking does. Bonus, using their hands is a great way to get a little fine motor skills and dexterity workout in too. You can find more recipes and inspiration in the activity booklet. And don't hesitate to explore the internet for other dishes they may enjoy, making and eating. Bon appétit!
So I hope everyone enjoyed seeing that video. And that is just a glimpse of one of 14 videos that we have produced in English and in French. I would like to point out that these videos are also available in French. And I would just like to briefly show everyone how you can access it. So this is the McGill Dementia Education Program website, mcgill.ca/dementia, where you will be able to find all of our very important resources, including past episodes of McGill Cares, the Dementia Companion Guide, as I mentioned earlier. And so all you need to do is when you're on our website, you go to Dementia Resources. And under Dementia Resources, you will see the button here that will give you access to the Dementia Activity Booklet, as well as the video capsule. Okay, it's as simple as that. And everything, all of our many resources, including virtual support groups, other types of programs that we have, everything is available for free. So I encourage everyone to go and have a look. Finally, I would like to thank you, Mariev, for your incredible work in making this project come to life. I mean, you worked really incredibly hard, and you and your team at the School of Physical and Occupational Therapy, it was a lot of people involved in making these videos possible. So I really want to thank you so much for all of your hard work and for being a part of this amazing launch today.
It was really my pleasure. It was a great project to work on and really a great team to work with. So thank you, Claire, for making this possible.
And once again, I would really like to thank Petro-Canada CareMaker Foundation for making this incredible resource available for so many people that are going to be able to benefit from it. So this webcast is an initiative of the McGill University Dementia Education Program, which is funded by private donations. If you would like to make a contribution to our program or for more information, please visit us at mcgill.ca/dementia. And if you would like to join our mailing list to be notified about upcoming episodes of McGill Cares and other really important resources from our program, please go to our website. You can subscribe to our mailing list or send us an email at dementia@mcgill.ca. Thank you for watching.